Dear listener, welcome to the Same Old Wombles. Today I'm joined by Alex Folkes, Adam Proctor, and Monfrere Niall Cooper. What can we talk about today? Today, the 4th of March, what can we chat about? I tell you what, let's pick the bones out of a last minute winner against the franchise. Come on, you Dons!
Say we're all impressed the way the fans approach this test. The days have gone when football clubs live and fly just on fans' love. Davis isn't just a game, and tough decisions must be made.
I think, Matt, the opening question has to be, how many times have we all individually watched Ronan Curtis's goal on
Yeah.
playback? Now, I'm thinking probably heading on towards 100.
I'm thinking so. Alex, how many times do you reckon you've watched it?
Well, I've definitely run out of fingers and toes.
Yeah, and even I've watched it quite a lot of times, and I was trying so hard to ensure this is a non-game, and even I've watched it maybe 20 times.
I've watched it. I've watched it loads of times, and of course, I watched it live as well. So,
You did. You were there.
and I mean, because I'm aware, and I want to go to this point because it is important. That this is a game that has a lot of strong feelings. There's a lot of emotions attached to it. And to be honest, I mean, listeners, just to say, out of the lot of us, I was the only one there. And I was really 50-50 about going. For the same reason that other people haven't gone. And I know that Ray Armfield, one of the most loyal fans that there is, wonderful man. We've had him on this show before. He wasn't there. It's because the idea of them being in our home is really so unpleasant, and the atmosphere around it can be incredibly toxic. So I get it. And to be honest with you, if the result had gone the other way, I would have regretted going. But it was incredibly toxic. But yeah, sorry, Adam, I interrupted
No, I
you
was just
there.
saying that that's, I will never go and watch them home or away, because I just did one, yeah. Is I just don't think they should exist, so I just don't want to see them. So I didn't even watch it on iFollow. I just went and did something else. Obviously, you guys were messaging and whatever. I didn't turn WhatsApp off. And yeah, I think the last time I did watch them was when we streamed it into King's Meadow, into the bar, and I found that a really weird experience anyway, and I didn't like it. And then when I saw images from one of the other times they came to Plough Lane, that there was trouble and stuff, I was just like, I don't want to be anywhere near that. And I read one of the things that you shared about people covering up their tops before they got to a certain part to make sure they weren't spotted, and that was probably on both sides, Although from all the pictures I saw, I didn't see many of them wearing any colours at all, which to me is always a bad. When I see any football fans go in, I mean, people can wear what they like, but I always want to wear I mean, we've had people shouting out of vans at me taking the mick because everything I'm wearing is yellow and blue. But that's fun, I like that. But I would, and I was worried about that, because there's a bit of a kickoff against the other game on the Tuesday night. I managed to scoop, can't remember who we were playing, but managed to scoop past that. And I just like, I don't want to be near any of that stuff. And I know. I think the people that come to that game, who sit in the away end, are coming to cause trouble. I actually think 99, 95% of them are.
Yeah, I'll come on to that in a second, Adam, because I'll talk through because I think the experience I had going there was quite interesting. But Alex, what was your I mean, what's your take on it, on the match in general?
Well, I'll never go to their place. I was I've seen I've been to a game once, a home game once against them. I was 50-50 about going and decided not to. Mainly, I think, because I didn't want, as you just mentioned, I didn't want to be in a position where if we lost against them, I would just feel so absolutely effing dreadful that I didn't think I could take it, so I didn't risk it. As it was, obviously, perfect result, last minute winner. Yeah, that's even better, is a last minute winner when you think maybe the game's gone. But Yeah, I don't really regret not going. But I think I'll make up my mind anytime we play them at home. I'll make up my mind for each game. I don't think I've got a blanket policy for home games. I don't want to play them.
Yeah,
I don't want anybody
and
to
listen,
have to, anybody to have to play them.
I completely get that. And Niall, I mean, I think you've got another excuse as well, which I completely get.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I mean, I'm never going to go to their ground.
No.
I will never go there.
Yeah,
That's for
I think we
definite.
all agree on that one.
Home, at home, right? I mean, as you all know, I'm recovering from a double high bar pass. It's been nearly 6 weeks, and the idea of going to that game where the emotion would have been through the roof, and like the jumping up and down and celebrating and all that sort of stuff, and all the kind of stuff would just, like, basically. For a bit of gore for the audience, what happens with a double heart bypass is you have a circular saw that cuts through all your ribs. So they're basically all broken. So it's like kind of taking that takes a while to heal. So probably wouldn't have been properly healed. I mean, I probably could have gone fitness wise, but I just thought, given that game, it wasn't sensible. So I will be at Grimsby, but I won't be. I'm going to Notts County. I'm going to Notts County on Saturday as well. So, right, that's me getting my football fix back. But there is, I just think it was just a bit too soon. And then I'm kind of now thinking whether I regret not going or not. And look, it was, I've seen all the kind of joy and I've seen all the pleasure and all the stuff on Twitter and Facebook and so on. And yeah, I mean, it was like obviously great. But like, I also saw a lot of the blogs where it was that whole game seemed to be, you know what you are. Being sung endlessly, and I can just imagine it being a really horrible, toxic, nasty atmosphere for that. And that for me, you know, I mean, like I'm like the rest of them, everybody else in this call. I don't think they exist. They make just being their presence makes me angry, and I just think it's just like even seeing them on our pitch is like soiling Plough Lane. That's kind of how I go, which is kind of. For me, I mean, it's a conversation we'll have after you come back to this, Matt. It's like, you know, what was the, for all of us having watched the videos, what's your video of choice? What's the one bit that you
No.
kind of go, right, that's, I can think of three or four that jump out at me from what I've
It's,
seen that I would
I mean,
like absolutely love.
it was interesting. I mean, it's interesting. The atmosphere was actually almost celebratory, even though there was a lot of the chanting going on. It felt very communal. It actually, in fact, it felt a little less, I don't know, a little less toxic in a weird way. The fans were managed. Are they found their customers, consumers, whatever they are, were managed incredibly well. I when I turned up to the game, they were in a bubble, so they were walking towards us, but they were surrounded literally by by the police, like all the way around, and they were sort of like frog marched into the ground, and they were trying to, you know. They were trying to give it large, but in actual fact, most people had just had their iPhones out, recording them as like out of curiosity. Do you know what well, it was like watching animals or something? I was just very, it was just really, and even though they're trying to provoke us, it was just like, wow, you none of what you're saying or doing is making any sense. It was very strange. But they were penned in. By the police, and after the game, also they were sort of like penned in, and a few of our fans were trying to, you know, get to them and, you know, saying who they are. But it was kind of surreal. And then you get into, I mean, I went with my daughter, so my 13-year-old daughter came along, and actual fact, she phoned up her friend, and her best mate came. So I had two, two of these 13-year-old girls coming along to watch this game of football. My daughter just liked seeing me wound up, and she was really into the game. But as soon as you get into the stadium, you felt safe, like this is my place. Do you know what I mean? And you started talking to people, and what is really interesting is, like you all, everyone else has different opinions. I ran into one guy who was saying he would just prefer the game to be played behind closed doors. No one comes along to it. It's played behind closed doors. It happens. It's done. Other people are going, it's a game. Do you know what I mean? With the fact we're here and whatever it is, it's just a game. We need to get on and do it. And so the build up began. So everyone has, and I was very apprehensive, like you all. So it was a kind of weird thing. But I ran into it. So I ran into a few people. And what was very funny is before anything happened on the pitch, I clocked the PA, and Philo had this playlist going. And the first song I remember hearing was that's a hey baby ooh, ah, and he was playing that. And obviously, those of us that were at Sellers Park when that was happening, you remember why he was doing that song. And then he followed that up by playing the Stone Roses Resurrection, and it was just brilliant. So it was all fantastic. And when I had a chat with him, and we just everyone knew what he was up to, which was great. And then I didn't catch the warm up, but I think we've all seen this, that Harry Pell needs to work on his shooting, because his kicking is all over the place, really. If anyone's seen some of the videos, he's it would appear from a neutral's point of view that he is potentially deliberately missing the goal, but I just think he's got a bad shot on him. He's no good with his right. It kept swinging off away from the goal and into the opposing consumers. So now you saw that.
I may have seen that, and it may be one of my highlights of the videos of watching Harry Pell look whacking the ball really hard into the away support customers at Velocity. And some of their fans were somewhat cross. And I've seen their social media posts saying it appeared that their player seems to be whacking the ball deliberately at people who just seem to be turning the other way. And I can't imagine that any person such as Harry Pell would ever be involved in shithousery like that, because he's such a decent bloke and he's got no reputation like that whatsoever.
Yeah.
But I
Alex,
have to say, I
what was your
absolutely
take?
adored that.
My favorite bit was at the end of the behind the scenes video, the one with no commentary that is 12 minutes long, which is always worth a watch anyway. Right at the end, and the players are coming back into the tunnel after the match, and certain player who may have scored the winning goal just before turning left into our dressing room, yells very loudly in the other direction, which I've never been behind the scenes. I haven't done the tour yet. I might need to go and see Mr. Armfield and do this tour. But he seems to be yelling something which I couldn't quite catch, very loudly and very vociferously at the other dressing room, or maybe at the referee's room. But I don't think he would do that. He's a nice guy. He wouldn't do that. So he must have been yelling at the. At that, my second favourite is actually the still image that suggests that franchise were playing a flat back three. That's certainly worth looking out for if you can find it. Yeah.
It was brilliant.
And
I mean, it
my
was.
other one, I love that, was just picking the corner flag and that absolutely primeval kind of response to like waving that flag like absolutely anything. That was quality. I
It was
absolutely
crazy. I mean,
adored
that was
that.
my favourite, was Nerful like going mad on the flag, because there's
Yeah,
one. It's obviously someone's
exactly.
clipped it short, which is fine. But the longer clip where you get more of him doing it, that's the one I really like. But the other one I quite liked was the one from literally kind of where we sit, which was the opposite way, and so you kind of got this view of the everyone bundling in, Nerful shaking the flag or whatever. But then someone said, every time I watch this, I see something new. And of course, there's different things going on. And of course, Rocket, I think, puts the flag back in, goes to pick up, it's kind of like, I'll be sensible. And it's kind of like, there's loads of little bits. But yeah, I thought the Nerfville shaking shaking the corner thing, flag, whatever you call it, was good, like,
And
great.
also,
It's
Gwynedd wouldn't
obvious.
have a
It
guess
obvious.
about how many rows in did John O'Toole actually dive? It took me a while to suss out who it was, but like he must be about four or five rows in, like absolutely loving it. I love the fact that that particular bit has been clipped in so many different languages. It was absolutely absolutely everywhere. It's gone like, you know, if you want to see what football's really about, and like, you know, this is good versus evil, all that sort of stuff. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. But like John Oates, and we're all obviously all very happy that the ball boy appears to be okay.
I just want to take us back just before we get into this, because all of that is amazing. I want to go back. I just want to tell you about the match, okay, before you get all into the thing, because I know, and I feel like I'm best placed. But just to say that from the very first minute of the game, you got a sense that not only were we up for it, but we were really there was a passion and there was an understanding about where everyone's position was and what everyone was meant to be doing. As a game of football, I haven't seen us play that well for ages. Mansfield aside, I mean, it felt like the last few games we hadn't really got there. But this time we were clicking. Everyone knew the position to get in. There were tackles flying in all over the place, which was just brilliant. I mean, and I think at the end there were six bookings apiece, but I think a couple of ours were, obviously Roland's got booked because he's taken his shirt off at the end, and someone else got booked for something sort of like similar. But the game itself was great. I mean, and the last 5 minutes of the game is, we've had a wonderful crossing by Nervell, who was brilliant in as sort of like right wing back. He was fantastic, wonderful crossing. Jack Curry, if anyone should be scoring the winning goal against them, Jack Curry would have been the ideal person. Beautiful header, loops over the goalie and onto the bar, and then they go down the other end and they miss an open goal, and then it comes to us, and it was just Well, you've all seen the goal, and everyone who's listening to this has seen the goal. And Ronan Curtis is just—he's so calm. But that's twice now. He scored last minute winners.
And I've got a photo with him, so he isn't going to leave. He's now with us.
Ronan
Alex.
Curtis's reaction was immense as well. I mean,
Yeah.
just like, you know, you sense, you looked at it, and like Nerfield's reaction, and Curtis and Curry and Brown, all of them just looked like they knew what it meant. You know, it was like there was such passion. And that for me, as an AFC Wimbledon fan, you've got like 11 players on the pitch and the subs all kind of getting what the club's about, and that's what made it feel really, really, really good. Because it's like, this is like our players, you know, our team doing what we believe in. Because they really, like, you felt the passion, you really did. You know, that's, oh, so hope we don't mess it up now. But like, you
Well,
know, that was great.
it's a weird one. I mean, like it was very intense. It was brilliant. The celebrations were amazing. I mean, like, it is that bit where you're hugging complete strangers and just jumping around the moment. Alex, sorry, mate.
Look, I get it. We mentioned it just now, but a big shout out to Noah, the ball boy, as well, who got picked up by Ronan Curtis, and then I'm sure would have been okay if it wasn't for the fact that about 22 members of our playing and coaching staff all piled in on top. Yeah, he sort of yellow jacket just disappeared underneath this mound of players. He's perfectly okay. It's great. I believe he's actually on TV tonight on the One Show.
Yeah.
Tonight being Monday, that's when we're recording this. Look, this is the only other example I can think of actually happened to me when I was a photographer for the club back in CCL days, when Darren Dobinson scored a goal. And in his celebration, I was sitting just to the side behind the goal, taking photos. And Dobbo didn't just come and celebrate in front of me, he came and sat on top of me, at which point everybody else came and piled in as well. The little stool I sat on collapsed. I was protecting the camera equipment because that's far more valuable than me, or to be honest, any of the CCL players. But you don't tend to get that, mainly because I think football frowns on it. But it was such a celebration. Obviously, it's a little bit dangerous for a small kid to be in the middle of that. But I'm really glad that he enjoyed it. And there's a photo of him, and I'm sure he didn't drink it, ladies and gentlemen, but there's a photo of him after the match holding a pint.
Yeah, that's the first thing my dad said, was that better not be a beer? I'm like, oh, I don't know.
But you know, I mean, he's obviously had an experience he's never going to repeat until we beat them next time. But yeah, no, it was just the emotion of it, and as Niall says, the fact that all the players seem to get it. And I know that we've not had the best run recently, and so any win at this stage is always going to be really well appreciated. But the fact that they went above and beyond, and they really got how much that win meant to us as a club, to us as fans. Yeah, that was perfect.
I genuinely have to say that, I mean, because of all the emotion running, but I had a tear in my eye, and I'm not the only one. There were other people there who found it incredibly emotional. I think beating them at our home ground in the last minute, it's just you couldn't really write that, and it genuinely did feel very emotional. At that point. But you know, this is the thing with sport, with football, with live sport, is you just don't know what's going to happen. And I think if anyone was going to write a script, this would be it, because their consumers, they have got nothing to celebrate. There wasn't a goal, there wasn't anything, do you know? And then right at the death, we nick it. And actual fact, we were brilliant all over the pitch, and such a brave decision from JJ to have that set up. But yeah, there were so many men of the match. O'Toole was fantastic there, and obviously Barmer is such a find, that guy from Palace. And the fact that we all thought he wasn't going to be in the side for the game, because all the build up to it was he wasn't going to be ready. He might be ready for Grimsby, he wasn't ready for this match. So to have his name announced in the starting lineup gave everyone in there a bit of a boost as well. But brilliant, brave decision, and it worked out perfectly. Adam.
Yeah, I was going to say. I mean, yeah, there's loads of bits that sort of tangentially related. Yeah, I'm pleased that the ball boy's okay, because that, like, I would have been that was scared the life out of me. These aren't just like other guys bundling on you. These are proper athletes who, like, they're solid. So, yeah, I think JJ might have got him around the neck to begin with, from what I could tell. Anyway, that was like magical. And from the other things I heard was like he said it was his like best day ever, you know, so I'm pleased about that. But I think I'm not going to go on and look at any more online, actually, because as I started to sort of dig around, you sort of start to bump into stuff from them. And of course, what that surfaces is just some of the lies that we heard in 2001, 2002, etc. And so that then stresses me out, because I'm like, why are we still, why is anyone peddling these lies? And so I'm not going to look at any more. But what I do want to, what and of course, what I have seen is people like, oh, well, it's all about, you know, we make them, and it's that I don't care about them, right? I care about winning from moral perspective in that sense, right? But we won that ages ago. We won that in 2002. But what happened after the game, and the videos that I've seen there of players, managers, managing staff, etc., they're not in the boxes, they're not upstairs, they're down with all the fans. And we've had that privilege since the get-go, that the players connect to us, and they change. Like, of course, they all change every year, but that connection still happens, you know. And you've got, you know, Curtis in down by the Phoenix, you've got JJ, and I don't even know who else was there. That's the, to be honest, out of all of it, although I will never go, the only place I wanted to be in at that point would be just to pick me up and drop me into the Phoenix and let me stand near some of those players that did something for us. And it's not just because we beat franchise, which is to some, you know, it's not an important game, but to some people it's important for different reasons. It's not an important game, but just to drop me in there and for me to be able to sort of, you know, say, yeah, you guys, you play football for us, And yeah, some of you are probably going to leave in the summer. But what we do know is that, and I can imagine this, and I'm not one of the people who thinks we can get to the Premier League necessarily, because unfortunately finances and Niall needs to fix that. But anyway, we could, and we know it because we've seen Premier League players come back to the Phoenix and be with us. We know that we're one of the very few clubs where you literally could be standing in the pub, in our ground, next to someone who's a Premier League player, earning stupid amounts of money, who'll be just happy that you're there because you are an owner of a club that sits in its community. That's the only bit I missed about Saturday, was like, because I like going upstairs and see the players, and they're always happy to take a photo and whatever. And I actually don't think people always get that. Like, they don't get it in terms of they don't get it at other clubs, but I don't think they quite get it that those players literally were more than happy to come and show the respect to us that I think we deserve,
Just want to jump in, Nye, because I mean I think that it's an interesting one about the game, but and that feeling. But I have to say, from watching it and from talking to other people, that I haven't felt that sense of emotion from winning a game for years. I don't even know if it's comparable
But
to a
that's
lot of
also
other
why I
games.
couldn't go. That's also why I can't go. I couldn't
But
handle
that
it.
sense of the emotion of winning, that sense. I mean, it had everything because it was a last minute winner. It was against them. I don't even know. I think I'd have to go back to the Plymouth or the Luton game, but I don't even know if that's comparable because it just felt like it was a completely different emotion. So I was upset that I had to go. I had to get my daughter and a friend back. So I wasn't in the pub with, all the players, and John Green had come over especially for the game as well. But it was just it was a different sense. But the trouble with, as I said, with live sport is you just don't know how it's going to end up, and that's the beauty of it. It's also the pain of it as well. And it would and so the and because it's so heightened, the emotion you felt afterwards was on a completely different level. For me, it was on a completely different level to it. And if we'd have lost, it would have been equally that down. It would have been equally as bad. But you can't predict sport. Nye.
I want to come back to one of the points that Adam made. And I think this is a really important thing for us to think about with JJ. The attitude towards of the players towards the fans hasn't actually always been that. So when I was on the DTV, there were several times where it was discussed that the players weren't as passionate or as bothered as it appears they are now. And one of the things that was quite important for the manager that was going to come in was to get a manager that was going to try and recreate that connection between the fans and the players, because it had drifted. So Adam, it wasn't, there were good moments and there were bad moments, good managers that were keen to get the players involved and others that weren't. So when we were on that losing streak and being shit, the players just didn't want to be anywhere near us and didn't want to be connected, and they were really kind of disconnected. And there was a problem that was identified at the DTB. My sense is that JJ is trying to build a team, and actually maybe Craig Cope, that is built around players that want to put on the shirt. Because actually our story is one of the things that's going to help sign a few players that, it's going to be a little tipping point. So if you can get players that actually care about us doing that, like John Joe O'Toole, right? I mean, his reaction, I mean, that was his first start. I mean, like, he was absolutely large in it. And Ronan Curtis is like a hero now. He's played, what, four games, five games? And like, those are people that have been recruited because I think they've got the right attitude. And I think that's so important for our club more than nearly any other, because you have to get the story.
No, Niall, I totally agree. I think we've talked about this before in different ways and at various venues and whatever about how we kind of have our unique selling point or a unique impact point, as I kind of like to think about it now, more than selling. But of course, we've often talked about that as being how do we kind of pitch ourselves to grow our fan base and all that kind of stuff. But I think, like you've just said, actually, you know, to get on board with that story and to have a bit of a career with Wimbledon and to have that thing is something that could attract players that we might not be able to afford, but think, actually, I want to go there because I think I can make an impact and it's going to do something, and I like what they're about. And you, you know, I'm sure football players think about things. So you align yourself to specific things. Because I was also thinking the other, like, I was thinking about the players that play for them in that game. And I was thinking, but if I was trying to, I was, my head was thinking, like, well, why would you ever play for franchise? You're kind of putting yourself in a really strange position as a footballer. And so I was trying to kind of, like, excuses to why that would be the only reason, you know, and I'm guessing it'd be geography, maybe, I don't know, whatever. But it's kind of like that. There's a reason that you don't play for them, but there's a reason
I love that you think that people are philanthropic in this sense. But ultimately, I'm very sorry to say that it's going to come down to money. I mean, if you're having to make a decision between one thing or the other, and the money is very tight between the two, then maybe those are there are other things that can play that can bring you in. But genuinely speaking, the reason that people play for them is because they probably pay quite well.
I think it's career damaging.
It's not though, is it? Because every week we boo a player that's played for them. Every week there's someone on from in the opposition, and we found out, and we go, we know who you are, to whatever player it is.
Because they've never got. I mean, they haven't gone anywhere in 20 years.
As an entity, yes, but individual players. You know, it's. You know, I don't think players are. I wish they were more philanthropic. I really wish they felt like you, but I'm guaranteeing that they don't, because Al Hamady did not hang around. I mean, he might have loved us, but he was gonna go where the money was.
It's the same thing that we've talked about. This is like, I think he should have stayed, and I think he still could have got signed.
But he was never going to, because he's been paid ridiculous amounts of money.
I blame his agent.
And that's what happens. Niall, you actually got your hands up.
Yeah, I mean, mine is more for what is coming in the world of football regulation, and what is that kind of takes on what Adam is coming about. And one of the big things that it's looking at is whether you are financially sustainable, whether you are technically insolvent. And franchise are technically insolvent, but they are totally dependent on an owner spunking loads of money in for them to stay afloat. Right, that's what they are. They are also a club that has, in terms of player wages to revenue, spends more than it receives. So that is, it's just an unsustainable club. Now, the way that financial regulation is going to move is that to actually achieve your license, one of the criteria will be to be making sure you stay within particular financial rules. And that will be part of it. So clubs like franchise will have to start cutting their cloth accordingly. That is before we start looking at the idea of financial flow changing throughout the pyramid, which is what's been argued about now. And there is now a clear dividing line between the Tories and Labour on this. So the Tories are kind of happy, well, lean towards being happy with the Premier League setting the deal, which is obviously going to benefit the Premier League. And the Labour Party want the independent regulator to look at how that deal works so it supports the entire pyramid. So there's obviously one that benefits us way more than the other. So, you know, I'll leave that political argument to one side. And I'll say, for Alex's sake, the Lib Dems are actually adopted fair games policies in their manifesto. So, you know, if there are two clear parties to vote for and one clearly not to vote for when it comes to what benefits us. So there is change happening. And if I was a franchise fan, which I never will be, that there is a lot of things to worry about in terms of the direction of travel for football. And for an AFC Wimbledon fan, you know, it's even with like what the Tories are putting through, that will benefit us. But if it's a Labour Party putting through that manifesto or a Labour Lib Dem coalition, then we will be looking at a significant change to us and how it will benefit us, which is a lot.
I think
Alex.
if we go back to the point about why do players sign for particular clubs, if we go to fairer financial dealings for the whole of football, and that includes the non-league as well, but if we go to fairer financial dealings, then players' wages at the top end will have to come down a bit simply because clubs can't legitimately make the revenue to be able to afford to pay them that much. And so a little bit more, and it won't be huge, but a little bit more, players will have to decide where to go based on something other than simply how much this club is going to pay me. And that, I think, is where we do have a slight advantage because we're part of a story. And you look at the training, you look at the manager, you look at all these other things that make a difference to how a player enjoys his work. And that's important. I don't think that we are the only club in this position. At the other end of the scale, ignoring them, but it's difficult. Much as I regret that this is the case, it's difficult for a club like Accrington or Barrow to sign players simply because it's difficult to sell those clubs to them. But a club like Wrexham, all that we deride the fairy tale and all this sort of the Hollywood bit and everything, they get a lot of TV and there's more exposure for the players who go there. Yeah, they're paying higher wages at the moment, but even without those wages, there's that extra little bit, which means that players think that there's an advantage to going there as opposed to another club of similar stature. So being able to sell ourselves as a community club with great coaches, with a clear pathway, with fans that love the players, I think that matters. And the fact that we've also got the story behind us is a selling point for our club. It will not make a difference to a player who has the opportunity to go up two divisions like Ali Alhamadi. And I'm not knocking him for this. And thank you, Ali, for the message you posted after the game on Saturday. It won't make a difference in those cases, but where it's a question of a player trying to decide, are they going to come to us or are they going to come to Gillingham, for example? Geographically, we're in the same vague ballpark, all that sort of thing. I think we can sell that and we should sell that and we should continue to build our club in whichever league we're in order to be able to sell that. I know Niall wants to jump in, but yeah, that's my two pence for that.
Alex, I agree. And with Adam, I'm not saying it's not important. I'm just saying primarily it's probably going to be financial first because it's a short career. And then it's gonna and then it's whatever else you can sell on top of it. I think it will make the difference. And so that's why we're able to get people like Ronan Curtis, even on a short-term contract. But Niall's waving his hands. I'm assuming it's because he is going to come up with some sort of.
Right. No, so there is, this is another technical point. There's another thing that's under review, which is called the players' creditors rule. The players' creditors rule is when a club goes into administration, any player has to be paid in full. Right. So as opposed to your caterer or your plumber or your turnstile operator, they will get like 1p in the pound when a club goes into administration. Now, at the moment, any footballer will have to have their contract honoured by the administrator. That's the number one thing the administrator has to pay first before anything else. So what that means is when an agent is looking at potential club, the risk, financial risk of that club is not taken into account. That means that it doesn't matter who you sign for. Now, if you think about the franchise have gone into administration twice, and they're probably potentially could happen again. Certainly, if they were not going to make the playoffs or whatever, or something tumbled out, then taking a 12-point hit isn't going to, that's probably what they'll do. The reality is, if that rule changes, then a club that is financially sustainable becomes more attractive to potential players because those clubs are the ones that actually can honour the contract. You wouldn't therefore sign for a club that's financially risky. That means that you start getting clubs going, right, actually, if I want to sign these players and if I want to be competitive, then I have to be sensible with my finances, because an agent isn't going to, you think about how much an agent would lose if they were to sign their player to sign for the franchise going to administration, they suddenly get 1p in a pound for whatever they were promised to do. The player goes, they're not going to want their players to sign for those kind of clubs. So it
And Don,
will
can I
change the
ask, is that
dynamic of football.
likely to change? Is that a
Being
regulation happening?
discussed,
Because
it's been
that's a
discussed. It's been discussed by the Labour Party and it's on the table at the DCMS
because I think
as part
because
of
that's where
potentially looking at how it's something fair game, we're campaigning for, because it just starts leveling the playing field, and it means you start having clubs having to, another reason to be financially sensible.
And but
But I
that's
want,
I
just
guess the
for to our
PFA is gonna
listener, it's a really important point to make, because that is makes a big difference to how we as a club, who are among the more financially sustainable, despite what anybody might say on other misguided podcasts, potentially, that we are, according to all the financial analysis, not done by me, but like by Sheffield Hallam and Portsmouth and so on, we're a sustainable club. We would benefit from this.
And I can I ask though, because the big thing there would be the PFA. The PFA
Yeah, I mean, like,
would not want that rule changed.
well, if you think about it from a PFA point of view, it is about looking, right, if a club was to go, ultimately goes bust, and that player doesn't get anything, right? So there is an element about you're just making it more secure. So, I mean, like, not everybody's going to jump off on board by this, but we're talking about the sustainability of football. So, I think it's, personally, I think it's a really crap rule that needs to be scrapped.
I suspect that if it does change, I hope it does. If it does change, then it will be grandfathered in. So those players with their current contracts will have them honoured on the current basis until they expire. And we've seen that the financial fair play rules that exist already with amortisation of the players' contracts mean that anything more than 5 years doesn't benefit the club in terms of being able to stagger the money across the years. So I would imagine that I hope it does come in. If it does, it will be in 5 years' time or at the expiry of your current contract. Which, is fair enough. If it persuades the PFA to get behind this, that would be a reasonable caveat for it, I think. None of these changes are going to be an overnight thing. With the best will in the world, you get an independent regulator, a decent independent regulator. If they were to start in September, start of the new season, August, September, whenever it is these days, I wouldn't expect to see huge changes for 2 or 3 years. But if you don't start now, you don't get the benefits in a few years' time. So, it's better. When was it? It's the old saying. When is it best to do something 10 years ago? When's the second best time to do something now? And that's the case, I think. So let's hope that whoever wins a general election, we get meaningful change in the next few months, because that way football can start its long, slow progress into being a sustainable sport.
Yeah, I mean, of course, none of that applies to Chelsea, who have got all their players on 8-year contracts. So if their contracts ends, it just goes on and on. And I guess the other teams will go down that route,
I
so
mean,
they'll just find it easier.
just imagine that if, when we start
He's got
getting the
it.
regulator moving forward,
Matthew, such a wind up, for goodness sake.
what will happen with the regulator stuff going forward is that there'll be a load of clubs doing breaking all the rules now to anticipate when it happens. So this is like, you will see, it's that kind of what whenever all the clubs are starting worrying about whether there'll be a ban on foreign state ownership. Right, they're all busy flirting with all the foreign, the kind of other countries like that. There are all these 8-year contracts, all the things that are being mooted. That's when you can tell they're probably going to come in, because the likes of Chelsea, Spurs, Man United, and so on will all be busy breaking every single rule going. Well, not, I mean, no, it's not a rule that now, but it will be.
I
Breaking
can
all
quite
the
see
rules.
it.
I can quite see a situation where the Premier League clubs all basically get together and say, "All right, guys, we've all broken these rules. Let's all accept a 12-point deduction for breaking the rules, and we'll all be exactly where we were before, just 12 points lower because we've all been penalised the same amount, but we'll have got this stuff off our books, and we can go forward." I'm just hoping that Luton turn around and say, "Well, we don't agree, and this is the only way we're going to stay up. So we're the only ones who aren't going to get penalised 12 points." Anyway, yeah, it's not going to happen, but I can see exactly as Niall says, there's going to be huge amounts of shenanigans happening at this top level and probably into the championship fairly
Oh, yeah.
heavily as well,
Oh, yeah.
because there are clubs that are technically insolvent. They can't exist without this huge amount of owner gambling on possibly making it into the top level. And that's no good for football.
I think Niall said this before, and you'll step in, but I think that the championship is the more Wild West than the Premier League, to be honest with you, because it's that point where people are really gambling to try and get in.
Absolutely, Matt. I mean, the thing with the Premier League is because there's so much money in it that most of the clubs there are sustainable just because of the at this moment in time. When they get relegated, they're not. But at this moment in time, they're sustainable. They're not when they get relegated because they're playing their players far too much, and it's a number of clubs don't have compulsory relegation clauses, which is absolutely vital when you're talking between the Premier League and the Championship. I mean, that should be. Some clubs do, like Watford do, and they haven't gone up recently. But there are clubs like that. I think Brentford do as well that help them. But otherwise, I mean, the Championship is just, I mean, like it's 90% of those clubs are financially, might be more than that now, financially technically insolvent. They're all, but the average is about 100. I think it's 107% is the average of player wages to revenue. It's just a completely basket case league, and the UEFA maximum recommended is 70%. So I mean they're way over it. It's just a basket case of a league.
Okay, because I'm aware, we've got to be winding this stuff up. And I listen, when we started this podcast this evening, I don't know, I kind of had a feeling I'd be ending it euphorically, but it feels like we've gone into how crappy the football structure is. But I'd just like to say, can I remind us all, we scored a last minute winner against the franchise. Ronnie Curtis is a god. There were loads of players of the match. Even people who didn't get on the pitch were players of the match, in my opinion. It was phenomenal. Let's use this feeling, and hopefully, we can go on from here. That's the thing. That the big thing is that hopefully we don't use anything.
I was going to say, let's wrap up with that bit. Like, what do we think is going to happen next? Because I started this podcast, as I do every season, quite positive. And as you guys know, I've got quite negative over the last few weeks. And because I wanted us to get in the playoffs. What have we got to do next? Obviously, we've got quite a lot of home games sort of coming up. We've got a couple of Tuesday night games. We need to follow up Saturday's game with a win. Obviously, that's a good 3 points. I don't think the other results really went our way. Grimsby tomorrow. What have we got to do? Because if we want to get into the playoffs, because that would be fun, right? Okay, yes, Matthew, you had a fun day on Saturday, but some of us weren't there, and we didn't have that kind of fun, and we're never going to have it. But we want fun, and for me, the fun will be kind of figuring out how we get into the playoffs. So what have we got to do?
Win matches. It's that simple. We need to win matches. We need to win. I think we've got what, 10 or 11 games left. We need to be winning about six or seven of those games is the big thing. And I guess the worry is that we had a week free to really work out what our system would be, and now we've only got probably a day and a half to figure out a system for Grimsby. So
I
either
think one thing.
does he revert back, or does he keep the system that worked on Saturday? And the system that worked on Saturday was really about a side who was going to have a lot of possession, whereas in theory against Grimsby or a side who are lower down, we might have more possession. So how does it, how does he, how does that change around? So do we go with the same system that we had on Saturday? Do we revert to another system? I'm feeling more confident because we've got Barmer back, and if hopefully because he came off towards the end of the game yesterday, but then Ox went into centre back, and he was quite he because that's his natural position, and he looked quite good there. But you're right. I mean, that's the thing. We need to win games is the simple answer to your question. But whether we revert back or whether we keep the system is the is going to be an interesting thing for the Grimsby game,
I think
Alex.
if we've got three games in the next 8 days, two of them at home on Tuesday nights, I think we need 7 points out of that. If we get 7 points, then we, wherever we are in the league, we're still in the hunt for the playoffs. We're doing all we can. We don't need to win every single game, but I think we need to be positive in every game. And if we can get those points, then I think we still got confidence. I don't pretend to know the tactics of it. I understand what you're saying, Matt, but you know what? I think if you have to play a game so soon after that win, I think Grimsby is a good game to play because I think they're eminently beatable with whichever system we play. And if it doesn't work to start off with, I've now got confidence that JJ will switch it up. And I think that we can adapt to circumstances. So yeah, I think get our 7 points and we're still in the hunt. Thank you very much. And this time next week, or a day or two later next week, when we're doing the next podcast, we can either be, well, that was our season, or we can be really happy and cheery and still in the hunt.
Yep. Good
For
thinking.
me, Matt, I think that there are two things that need to happen. One of which is stay fit, because we're on the verge of getting nearly all of our players back. And when we've got them all fit and back, then I think that's going to make a very significant difference in this running, because that's been our blip. Our blip has been we've had players missing in certain areas. The other thing is, can Josh Kelly get a goal? We need a player to score up front. Because that
Yeah.
is important. Because, great having Ronan Curtis, but he's not supposed to be a centre forward, is he? He's not supposed to be the one winning us matches. He is, which is great, and we all love him. But we need Josh or Davidson or somewhere to start getting those goals in. That's my other little worry. But I
Yeah.
think if we
I
can
mean,
stay
he's
fit, then we're going to be very hard to beat. And if you're hard to beat, then we're going to be in contention.
I agree. I mean, I'm just hoping that one, if Kelly scores, he'll go on a run. But his performance yet on Saturday was brilliant. I mean, he did everything but, and he's just a nuisance. So, but yeah, I'm hoping that he scores sooner rather than later, maybe tomorrow evening. But anyhow, chaps, that's it. Thank you to Adam, thank you to Alex, and thank you to Niall. We are the same old Wombles. We beat the franchise. You dons.